Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Get ready.
You ready?
Ready.
Ready.
We're ready.
I'm ready. 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 Ready.
Are you ready?
Get ready.
3, 2, 1.
Ready?
Yes. So ready.
This is St. Louis's News Radio.
I'm ready.
And this is Overtime.
Okay. I'm ready.
It is 8:33 and it's Tuesday, August 13th, back to school day for tens of thousands of kids across our region. Some of your kids started last week, I know, but not next year because they'll have a later start date if they are used to starting super early. All right, welcoming into Studio B, Charlie Brennan.
Good morning, and yeah, with the kids back in school, wow, roads are completely different.
Yeah?
Yeah, not for the better, I'm afraid, folks.
Oh.
It's a lot slower, but... hey, we love them.
Well, the rain didn't help this morning either, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
For rush hour. Amy Markscores, hello.
Good morning.
And Mark Reardon.
I think we should ban school.
Exactly.
My son would be totally on board with that.
I'm sure.
Sports only,
please.
He's
not the only one, right.
Recess and sports, thanks. Okay, let's talk about the race for governor. We knew this was coming eventually, but now it is official. State Auditor Nicole Galloway officially declaring her intent to run for the Democratic nomination for governor in 2020. Of course, she is the only Democrat holding statewide office right now in Missouri. Her likely opponent is Governor Mike Parson. He has yet to file papers or officially announce, although we understand that's probably coming in a few weeks. Now, Galloway has been very critical of Parson for signing that law that criminalizes abortion after 8 weeks of pregnancy with no exception for victims of rape or incest. Charlie, is that going to be the big issue? What do you think will be the big issue in this race?
Hard to say. You know, I just am not sure yet. I did see one poll that showed that abortion is the most important issue for 69% of Republican women who are pro-life. In fact, the Republican women nationwide, this is not Missouri, are actually more pro-life than Republican men, strangely enough. Maybe not strangely enough. But it could be. I think it's going to be a good race. I think, you know, she has kind of limited experience, hasn't been in public eye all that long. But I think the time that she has been in office, she's acquitted herself well with some good audits. I think she speaks well in public. And I think Mike Parson is pretty likable. I think overall, he's done things that people generally approve of. I mean, on both sides of the aisle. So I think it's going to be a great race.
You know, I think it will become an issue, and it will be more of the abortion issue, I should say. And the conversation won't be focused on what it should be. And the reason why I say this is that when you had those abortion bills passed in New York where you could carry a baby full term and have an abortion for any health reason, including you're stressed out because you don't think you have enough money now, 9 months into this pregnancy, to support a baby, you had a swing the other way, where you start getting these pro-life bills that are the heartbeat bill. After 8 weeks, you can't have an abortion. And there are a lot of people, pro-life and pro-choice, who fall somewhere in the middle. And what happens is when you have the rape issue, and, well, Governor Parson signs this bill, there's no exception for rape. It is less than 1% of all abortions involve that scenario, but that becomes the key issue. And that will hurt Governor Parsons. Instead of it being a more general pro-life bill saying let's make partial birth abortion illegal, because that used to be a bipartisan issue. Bill Clinton was against partial birth abortion. It was a bipartisan thing. Instead of focusing on that, if you focus on the heartbeat bill, everybody starts focusing on the rape, and you get the governor who won't help women who are pregnant from rape, and the conversation gets completely skewed. And I think that will hurt Parsons.
Mark?
Well, I don't think the abortion issue is going to completely frame this race. I think if you look at the video where Nicole Galloway rolled this thing out, she talked about dark money flowing from corporations to lobbyists. So she seemingly wants to frame the race as, and some people think it's new versus, you know, business as usual, which is interesting because we know, we know that Eric Greitens did that as well. In a bit of a different way. But look, the abortion issue is important, and she's a Democrat. We have to remember this. And in St. Louis County, in the suburbs of Kansas City, those extreme abortion issues, when, as Amy points out, you don't have exceptions for rape and incest, don't play very well. And I think that she's going to have to shore up the base the same way that Mike Parson is going to shore up the base. I would hope that when we talk about this race a year from now, we're not just focusing on abortion. I had thought that we were past a lot of these things, but we learned in the past few months that we're not.
All right, real quickly, because we have to go to a break here, but there was some talk on this panel, with a different panel, but on overtime, a few months ago that perhaps Governor Parson might have a Republican challenger. Charlie, do you think that there might be a Republican challenger? Some people had said maybe Eric Schmidt might have his eye on the office.
Well, why don't we ask Mark Reardon, personal friend of Eric Schmidt?
I think Eric Schmidt is not going to challenge Governor Parson in this race, all right? Who's going to challenge Governor Parson in this race, and this is shocking to even me, is Eric Greitens. I mean, he was pictured at a rodeo in Sykeston. I think that he's kind of waiting out here to see what happens with Kim Gardner, and I don't think that he's ruled this out. I think a lot of Republicans think that that's crazy, but if there is a challenge, I think that's where it would come from.
Wow. Wow, all caps, Galloway, exclamation point. Yeah.
Well, that would make an interesting race for sure.
That would be the Democrats' dream.
As far as covering it as a reporter, too, be like, all right, let's bring that on.
Nicole's like, Eric, I got an idea.
You know, how can he possibly do that, though? Every single stop, he'll be just approached with questions about the past.
Remember,
and
he doesn't
woman.
Answer questions. He just makes his speech and then he runs
and
off.
And Kevin Killeen doesn't stop asking questions.
What did he call him? Governor Greitens, don't be the skedaddle governor. He ran after him one time. I think we still have that somewhere. It's 8:40. We'll check traffic and weather together.
Get ready for the Cards and Royals tonight. Amron Total Access 620. First pitch 7:15. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
All right, it's 8:43. I'm Debbie Monterey, along with Charlie Brennan, Mark Reardon, Amy Marks-Kors, and the Trump administration announcing yesterday it is moving ahead with one of its most aggressive steps to restrict legal immigration, denying green cards to many immigrants who used Medicaid, food stamps, housing vouchers, or other forms of public assistance. Much of President Trump's efforts to crack down on illegal immigration has been in the spotlight, but this rule change targets people who have entered the U.S. legally and are seeking permanent status. It extends the forms of public assistance that people cannot have ever used. Amy, should those seeking legal immigration be penalized for using public aid?
Well, this one's a tough one, and you really have to parse through the definitions of this bill, and specifically the definition of welfare. So these public charge doctrines have been in American immigration laws for 400 years, literally since the colonies and massive ones were passed in the 19th century, in the 20th century. And when President Bill Clinton was looking at immigration reform, he changed the definition of welfare to cash benefits only, so that food stamps, Medicaid, school lunch, public housing, none of that was considered welfare. So receiving any of those benefits wouldn't disqualify you. What this does is this broadens the definition of welfare from cash benefits only to include food stamps, Medicaid, Medicare Part D subsidies, Section 8 housing, and a few other things. But what it does exclude is homeless shelters, school lunches, children health care. Pregnant women and children will be excluded from this if they're receiving Medicaid. It doesn't affect asylum seekers or humanitarian projects and programs, And it also is not retroactive. So the terminology sounds very sweeping, but when you look into it, it affects a smaller group of people than you would initially assume.
Well, I would say this. And that is, it's most important to make sure that the immigrants are working. And you can be working and making like nothing. And I think that a housing voucher might be appropriate for somebody who just got here and is now working in a nursing home, changing diapers, you know, the jobs that really other people do not want. And there's a lot of jobs like that. But making $8 to $9 an hour, I have no problems with that. That person's climbing the corporate ladder. Under this, this person might lose some of those benefits, like the food stamps and the housing voucher. So I think we need these individuals. By the way, it does not apply to people seeking asylum or to refugees. Mm-hmm. And the people I know in this community are almost all refugees from Syria. And the vast majority are working, but they also are discovering that when you make more money, you do lose the food stamps. And so we have some Syrian refugees from St. Louis who are now moving to Michigan, where the food stamp rules are a little more liberal. You can work and make more money and still get those food stamps. So if I was the president, I would say the key is not, are you on these programs? The key is, are you able to work and are you working?
Isn't the issue also, though, that if they've been on public aid, they might not be able to stay here, that it kind of counts against them?
Well, under this, it would be that you wouldn't be able to get the green card mm-hmm. or the more permanent status under his proposal. And you don't want people coming here and just living off the fat of the land on someone else's dime. So I understand that. But there are a lot of immigrants who are eligible for these programs and are working their butts off.
I know that when my dad's family got permission to move to this country, they had to agree to not go on any kind of public aid, but they were sponsored by a church in Evanston, Illinois. So there was a family that kind of helped mm-hmm. to support them and help them to navigate the landscape in Chicago. So Mark, maybe we need a return to that, more groups getting involved and helping folks.
Well, I think we need that overall just because there's not as much tax money. But look, we have 80%, the figure is 80% of non-citizen households with children use at least one welfare program. So I think ideally you have immigrants that I think ideally everyone shouldn't use the welfare programs and we should get people to work. But this does go back several hundred years and was, I guess, maybe even recodified in 1996 with a bill, with the welfare mm-hmm. bill that was passed. So, yeah, it's going to seem like one of those things. And it's interesting. I read a New York Times story about this morning, and it had like this quick blurb paragraph that says the ability of immigrants to support themselves has long been a consideration in whether they were granted right to, you know, live and work in the U.S. But they never go into any detail about the history of that, or they mentioned the 1996 changes. So I think this is a little bit more nuanced than just kicking people out of the country who want to be here, especially because why does the other side on this issue, you know, let's keep in mind we're talking about illegal immigrations, non-citizens, never talk about the effect on people who are native-born when it comes to access to welfare programs and other things like that? You would think, I would think, that they would have priority. Maybe not.
Well, I would also say, you know, while we're taking on the immigrants getting food stamps, let's look at some of the corporations and businesses that get breaks from the government. Let's not forget them. I wish the president would say, hey, let's cut those back.
KMOX News Time is 8:48. We'll be back with round three of OT after this.
I want to hear more.
This is Overtime on KMOX.
It's 8:53, round three of OT on The Voice of St. Louis. I'm Debbie Monterey, along with Amy Markscores, Charlie Brennan, and Mark Reardon. And I think it's a pretty commonly accepted adage in this day and age of social media that if you want to live a happy life, don't read the comment section. Don't read the comment section. Don't read the comment section. The Post-Dispatch is changing theirs. The biggest difference will be a community moderation and commenter score. The commenter score will take into account how often you post, the quality of the comment, and whether they include insults or personal attacks. And those comments that drive positive responses will be highlighted, while the negative comments will be flagged. Mark, do you think this new kindler, gentler comment section will work, or should maybe they should just scrap it all together?
Well, I don't look at the comment section. I like the change where they basically made you click on the comment section to see the comment section. The comment section is kind of like my voicemail, and you guys could probably relate with this, which is a bunch of idiots, most of whom are the same idiots that repeatedly call and leave lengthy messages, which never get listened to unless I want to extract some audio from the idiots and play it on the air. So I don't know who these people are that have all the time to make the vile and disgusting comments in the comment section, but I wish they'd just go away altogether. I guess it's a, you know, it's a free speech issue, but they tend to be ridiculous. So that is one area I would always avoid, is the comment section in a newspaper, whether it's the Post or anywhere else.
Charlie?
Yeah, I wonder why they're doing this. Is it inspired by liability or something, or do they think that too many crazy people are commenting? I don't know. Do crazy people inspire other crazy people to comment? I know in some other newspapers, sometimes I feel that the comment section is pretty impressive. You get some real great writers for the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, you know, who are commenting on stories.
They must have a moderator then.
Well, either that or the audience is so huge, I don't know, and maybe they do kind of curate it and the best goes to the top. I am not sure, but I will agree. Sometimes it's out of hand.
I feel like the comment section is the tuna net of the internet world. You know how everyone's like, oh, the dolphins are getting stuck in the tuna nets, and you have the comment section and you have all these trolls getting stuck in the tuna nets, and there's got to be some way to use this to make the world a better place. We're catching all the trolls in these giant nets. What can we do to filter them out?
A good question for another day. It's time for news at the top. Charlie, you've got 5 seconds.
Hey, among other things, were you picked last in grade school when it came to sports teams? We're going to talk about that and other topics.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.